Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing COVID travel information and your debt collection rights.
Yeah, Joel, this is our Friday episode where we cover a bunch of different topics. And specifically, we're going to be speaking with Scott Kies on the second half of this episode. Scott, the founder of Scott's Cheap Flights. He's going to have a lot of great information for us regarding travel, specifically airline travel. And we're going to cover cancellations, you know, flight delays, and the different rights that we have to get our money back. So I'm looking forward to that part of this episode. But first, man, I saw that your favorite e-bike company, they are now offering an affordable e-bike for $1,000.
Yeah, so Rad Power Bikes. I have a Rad Wagon. Actually, interesting story. Just sold my Rad Wagon, and I pre-ordered the new Rad Wagon, which
Rad Wagon 4.
Yeah. So it's got some extra special things happening there. So I'm excited to get that in September. But yeah, they just announced this week that they're about to offer a bike that costs less than $1,000. And for an e-bike, that's really incredible. Their bikes are already pretty affordable in the $1,500 range. If you're an e-bike enthusiast, obviously a regular bike with no e-power is going to be a whole lot cheaper than that, or a lot of them are. But I've enjoyed my Rad Wagon for a lot of years. I put like almost 2,800 miles on it.
Nice.
And the Rad 4, man, I'm looking to put at least that on that one too. So, but I was excited to see that people are going to be able to get an e-bike that looks good, that has decent components for $1,000, man. That's not bad.
It's a really good deal. And I wanted to share one thing that I noticed about, so I saw the different videos and like the promos for the new Rad Wagon, right?
Yeah,
the Rad Wagon 4.
They're goofy.
Well, specifically what caught my eye was that in a lot of the footage of people riding the bike, they're literally just riding it. They're not pedaling.
Twisting the throttle and going. Yep.
And so as someone, I guess, who's maybe more of like a purist, you know, when it comes to bikes, I guess I am happy that more folks are riding bikes, even if it is an e-bike and even if they're only using the throttle and they're not really moving their feet. But I think it's just funny that they are specifically targeting those folks. It's like, look at all these folks getting around town and they're not even pedaling at all. I know that's not how you use your bike. You certainly use it in a more assist manner.
Yeah.
But folks are treating it more like a little electric scooter, and it looks like they're riding a bike, but not really.
No, that's honestly, there are a lot of people that have purchased Rad bikes in particular and e-bikes in general in our neighborhood. And I feel like most of them twist the throttle and go. Most of them are not pedaling almost at all. And no judgment here. That's not how I like to use it. I really like to actually get a workout. I like to get exercise when I'm riding that bike. And for me, it's just like, oh, it helps up the hills with two kids on the back or whatever. And, you know, Atlanta can be pretty hilly.
Sure.
But I'm also commuting long distances on it. And so that extra little assist helps me show up to work, not just a complete sweat bomb.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, there are a lot of people riding it like that. And no wonder they would put that in their little commercial, because they want people to know that they don't actually have to do any work if they don't want to.
Sure. Yeah. So you said that no judgment passed by you. I am trying and working to not pass judgment, but also don't neglect any of the great companies out there who are making non-motorized versions of bikes as well, and specifically cargo bikes. Yuba is the company that makes the bike that I have, and they came out with this $1,000 version of their cargo bike. And so it's this nice, affordable, baseline sort of addition, and you're going to virtually guarantee that you get a good workout because there's no motor.
Yeah, you're definitely getting a good workout with a cargo bike that has no electric capabilities, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, let's get on to our Friday flight, a sampling of stories that we found interesting this week. And Matt, first, let's quickly talk about my lack of being able to find yeast. I got some...
Still?
Well, still, yeah. No, I haven't found
no
any.
No yeast? Okay.
No. One kind listener offered to send me some. She sent an email, which was very kind. And a few comments in the Facebook group about where they've been able to find yeast. I'm going to go to Costco or Walmart. A couple of people mentioned they found some there. We'll see what happens.
Get you a 50-pound drum of it.
Yeah, exactly. Another person, too, mentioned going to a local bakery. And that's actually a really good idea that I had not thought about. But there was an article that I read this week on Eater that really kind of drove this point home, the lack of yeast and the increase in people baking. King Arthur Flour, whose sales have risen 600% apparently, answers baking questions of their customers via email and the phone. And apparently, quoting Eater here, the hotline has become a magnet for lonely, anxious human behavior and lots of questions about sourdough. Sourdough is like obviously so hot right now, right? But I just found it neat that the now baking-obsessed public has this free place to turn with these specific questions, even if they might get a bit emotional at times.
Oh, Well, what's interesting too about this hotline is you don't necessarily have to be a King Arthur Flower customer in order to call that number. And I know this because Kate,
you called?
I didn't call, but Kate's called. She's several years ago she called and she was following a baguette recipe on their site and it wasn't turning out and she couldn't figure it out. So she gave them a call. She said they were so incredibly kind and patient with her, but they kind of walked through all the steps and, you know, she was following the recipe to a T. And so they kind of stepped it back even further and they, you know, then they asked her, well, are you using our flour? And she had to admit that she wasn't. She was just using the cheap Aldi flour.
She didn't just hear a click.
No, they stayed on the line with her and they're very kind and patient even still. But that's when she learned that different types of flour are made differently. And, you know, King Arthur flour has like a different amount of protein in it, which means it's going to react differently. So if you're out there and you're maybe a new struggling baker, that could make all the difference for you.
Yeah, call King Arthur. I don't know what the number is. We'll post it in the show notes.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to the next interesting topic, Matt. We've talked a lot about the PPP loans that were made available because of the pandemic to help keep businesses afloat, right? We also talked about how to get these loans and the recent changes in forgiveness eligibility. There was also a lot of confusing language and it wasn't clear what the requirements were going to be. There were just a lot of moving parts and it left a lot of business owners pretty confused. Unfortunately, that also meant that a lot of borrowers were reluctant to even tap those loans, which was unfortunate because many of them needed them in times of distress. But fortunately, there was at least a little bit of clarity that we got last week that we felt like we had to mention on the show today.
Yeah, last Wednesday, the SBA released some new forms that greatly simplify the forgiveness application process. And they also included this safe harbor option where business owners can just affirm that they weren't able to operate at the same level as before the pandemic. Sounds like a much better option than the 11 pages that was supposed to only take 3 hours to complete. Although I saw in one article, there was an individual that said he spent at least 25 hours trying to navigate all the different checkboxes. And so
that was before these forms were released though, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So hopefully it's gotten a lot simpler and people that were daunted by looking at the process of trying to get forgiveness, hopefully it's a lot simpler now and they'll be able to get forgiveness without having to spend a whole lot of time. And it should be, from what we can tell, a pretty straightforward and simple process now.
Yeah. And you know, it wouldn't hurt as well to get in touch with your banker, your bank that you received your PPP loan through, because they're going to know more of the specifics to your individual business a little better. That way, if you do have any questions, you can ask them as they'll likely be pretty up to date on the information that's out there. Joe, let's talk about debt collection as well.
My favorite topic, Matt.
Yeah. And it seems that debt collectors are a little emboldened right now. More folks are financially vulnerable. And so there have been a few anecdotes and news reports that seem to show that some debt collectors are becoming even more pushy and reckless in their collection efforts. And so because of that, if you get contacted by a debt collector, it's really important that you know your rights. Collectors have to follow the rules that are in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And we'll link to some FAQs in our show notes that a lot of folks might have when it comes to debt collection.
Yeah, Matt, and one particular tactic that debt collectors tend to use, or the shady ones at least at times, are trying to get you to pay even just a small amount towards what you owe, towards the debt. And that can actually restart the clock on that debt in many states. So there's something called the statute of limitations, and in every state it's a little bit different in how long the collector has to be collecting that debt before they're not allowed to collect on it anymore. And it makes sense that these debt collectors are trying to get you to do that because then it makes it easier for them to sue you for that debt in court. But the CFPB has proposed a rule that consumers should be notified about that debt clock restart. Matt, because I guarantee you 98% of them don't know that that's the case. But that is not a law that's been enacted yet. Sadly, we'll let you know if there's any movement on that. But one thing you need to be aware of right now is that you have rights. And one right you have is to send that debt collector a letter telling them to stop contacting you. If you're being harassed in particular by a debt collector, file a complaint with the CFPB and your state attorney general's office. Matt, it's kind of hard to read those anecdotes that you mentioned. It's hard to see those stories of people being harassed by debt collectors, and in particular in a pandemic when everybody is suffering at least some hardship. Many people financial and other people mental and financial. I mean, there's just so many hurdles to overcome, and it makes it so much harder with dirty debt collection tactics like piling on top of that.
Yeah, well, speaking of dirty, gross debt, man, payday loans, they are probably the worst financial product ever. And recently, they've been getting around Google and Facebook ad bans to reach customers with their absolutely rank offerings of interest rates in the 2 to 500% range. Man, these lenders, they prey on the financially vulnerable, of which there are many right now. In particular, they're using SEO, so search engine optimization, to target people who are searching for help, and they're feeding them these quick online loans. There are folks who might take those loans and they're sure that they're going to be able to pay them off, right? Those small loans in just that short period of time. But often, man, it becomes a terrible cycle of bait and switch tactics to go along with that high interest rate. So if you are having a hard financial time right now, make sure to stay away from not only the physical payday lending storefronts, but the online ones as well. Man, there's one near us, and every time I drive by it, I like look over there and glare at it. I want them to feel my disapproval.
Yeah, I kind of shudder when I see them. Yeah, and it is amazing when you open your eyes how many there are around where most of us live, and in particular small towns. It can be so tough to go through certain small towns these days. I feel like there's a lot of fast food restaurants and payday lending places. And yeah, those are truly like the worst financial product. And it does promote, like you said, this sick cycle of debt that's hard to get out of. All right, Matt, let's talk about travel real quick before we bring Scott on. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. But cruise lines are voluntarily suspending trips out of U.S. ports until September 15th. I'm sure that some people out there maybe are itching to get on a cruise right now, but I'm certainly not one of them. And I've actually never been on a cruise before.
Me neither.
I just can't imagine that demand is high given the current circumstances, but it will be interesting to see what happens to the cruise industry when they do start to resume operations from the United States in the fall. And I think it's probably a smart marketing move and a smart health move to say no cruises until mid-September.
Sure, yeah. Assuming the U.S. can manage COVID-19, there might be deals, though, in the fall. So if you are all about cruises, yeah, keep an eye out. And Joel, we're going to talk more about travel and how you should be thinking about it in just a minute with a friend of the show and travel expert, Scott Kies. We're going to talk with him right after the break.
All right, Matt, we're back from the break. We just talked a little bit about the cruise industry, and now we're going to talk about travel more broadly. And one of our favorite travel experts to have on the show, we had him on quite a while back, but we haven't actually talked to him. That was back in our Money Pro episode days, is Scott Kies. And Scott runs the website Scott's Cheap Flights, and it's also an email newsletter, and it informs people about the best and cheapest places to book travel. And so, Scott, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time to join us on the show today.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, Scott, we're glad to have a flights and airfare expert on the show. And, you know, you sent out an email to your newsletter subscribers describing getting a refund on a flight that hasn't yet been canceled, sort of as this like game of chicken. And so what do you mean by that? And how can our listeners who find themselves in this predicament get their money back?
Yeah, great question. So here's the deal. By law, if an airline cancels your flight, you are eligible for a refund, period. Doesn't matter that there's a pandemic, doesn't matter that they didn't want to, doesn't matter that they'd really like to keep your money. If they cancel your flight, then you're owed a refund. For a lot of people, this has been a really urgent matter during the pandemic and during over the past few months when the airlines have been doing major surgery to their schedules, canceling flights left and right. But for a lot of folks, they didn't necessarily know that they were eligible for a refund when an airline cancels their flight because the airlines didn't tell them. They tell right. them, you know, they'll cancel your flight and send you an email. Hey, Matt. Hey, Joel. Sorry, we just canceled your flight, but here's a, we've already processed a travel voucher for you. Click here to accept it. And they don't mention anywhere in it that you can get a refund if you prefer. Now, if you're anything like me, you'd rather get that refund because you can't go down to the grocery store and pay for your food with a $500 American Airlines gift card. You need your cash to do that.
You can't buy craft beer with a voucher.
You can't buy craft beer with an airline's gift card. And so it's really important to know your rights and to be able to take advantage of them because the airlines aren't necessarily going to tell you about it. And so this is why I liken it to a game of chicken. If you have a flight booked, even if you've decided, I'm not taking that trip, I don't feel safe or comfortable right now, it still makes sense to hold off as long as possible to cancel it because if the airline winds up canceling the flight that you're on, or if they make a significant schedule change, let's say they switch it from a nonstop to a connecting flight, or they change it by at least a couple hours, if they cancel or make a significant schedule change, then they owe you a refund. Whereas if you're the one who cancels, you're only going to get a travel voucher. So this is why I liken it to a game of chicken. Whichever party blinks first loses.
So is it a matter of when you are offered a travel voucher, sticking up for yourself and saying, no, I know I'm eligible for a refund and you need to make that happen. Because you might not always get offered that immediately from the airlines. So yeah, is it just a matter of telling them that you know what you're eligible to receive?
Unfortunately, yes. It is oftentimes a matter of showing them that you know your rights, mentioning it. Sometimes, most of the time, it's pretty simple. You can call up the airline and they'll tell you, we can see we canceled your flight, therefore we're going to process a refund. I would say in maybe 10 to 20% of cases, they might put up a fight, whether because that is you've got an agent who might be misinformed about the law, or whether that's because the airline itself, the executives have decided they're just going to flout the law, which is frankly shameful and disgusting in my book. But yeah, there are a number of airlines, especially around the world, less so U.S. airlines these days, but airlines like Air Canada, TAP, a Portuguese airline, a couple in Mexico, Volaris and Interjet, that have been really just dragging their heels, throwing up roadblocks whenever they can to try to avoid giving customers the refunds that they're legally owed. And so in those situations, if you've called a couple times and they're still just saying, no, we're not giving you a refund, even though you're legally owed one, you've got two other options at your fingertips. Step one, you can file a complaint with the Department of Transportation. Now, you might be thinking, file a complaint, that sounds like just kind of spitting in the wind, doesn't actually do anything. Well, in this case, actually, the Department of Transportation, what they do is that they'll take your complaint and they immediately forward it to the airline. And they're like, airline, you need to rectify this situation promptly, and we're watching, and they're kind of keeping tabs on the airlines and threatening enforcement action if the airlines don't comply. I've seen tons and tons of different of Scotia Flights members who have said that they were denied a refund until they filed that complaint, and then the airline, nice, got it together and gave them the refund. If that doesn't work, the last option you've got at your fingertips is to dispute the charge on your credit card. Every credit card, every bank guarantees you that if you pay for something with their credit card and you don't receive what you paid for, like let's say you booked a flight and they canceled the flight, that you can get your money back, that they're not going to hold you to that. And so if the airline won't process a refund, you can dispute the charge, the bank will reimburse you, and then they'll go fight with the airlines to try to get the money back for themselves. So it's a nice way to make it your credit card's problem rather than your problem.
Yeah. Right, yeah, another great reason to not pay for your plane tickets in cash, however it is that you're supposed to do,
or
that
Bitcoin. You don't want to do that either.
And also trying to avoid paying with it with debit cards. Credit cards have stronger protections along these lines. And so if you have a credit card, good idea to use that to pay for your flights.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about cancellations. What about just like massive delays, right? Like a lot of flights are just being rescheduled. And so what rights do passengers have who have had their travel times change, significantly, where it massively alters their itinerary, including hotel stays and like connecting flights as well?
Right. So the Department of Transportation, again, this is federal law, says that if an airline makes a significant schedule change to your itinerary, that also makes you eligible for a refund. Now, what's frustrating is that they didn't spell out exactly what is a significant schedule change. They leave that up to each individual airline. But each individual airline actually has this in their what's called their contract of carriage, essentially the fine print. I agree to these terms and conditions when you hit purchase on a flight. Most airlines, it is 2 hours. So they'll say if you change your flight times by more than 2 hours, then you're eligible for a refund. what was interesting, United Airlines tried to really get away with some stuff during the pandemic, where before the pandemic, their policy was 2 hours. But during the pandemic, all of a sudden, they quietly tried to shift it to 25 hours.
Wow.
Saying like, oh yeah, we can change your flight by an entire day, 24 hours, and we would not consider that a significant schedule change and thus eligible for a refund. People understandably had a way with them on social media. There's a big dust up about it. And what was funny was the Department of Transportation actually ended up essentially subtweeting United Airlines in a memorandum that they put out saying that airlines cannot retroactively change their policies on significant schedule changes. They can't, try to, whatever the policy was when you booked is the policy that you're owed. They can't retroactively apply this new 25-hour policy. Well, United Airlines had a lot of pressure. Right, exactly. It's common sense. And so anyway, they backed down. They said, okay, we'll go back to the 2-hour policy, thankfully. But in general, 2 hours, you should be good for a refund.
I thought you were going to say that they kind of quietly went in there and trying to change hours to weeks. Oh, it's just 2 weeks. I'm sorry.
Oh, did you think hours? No, sorry.
That'd be even worse, right? Scott, too, we've seen some kind of interesting things happen in travel insurance during the pandemic, right? A lot of policies don't seem to be covering people as well as they would have hoped. So what guidance can you offer people who are booking travel about how they should go about thinking about and then buying travel insurance right now when they're going on a trip?
Really good question. And I'm going to try to simplify this as much as possible because I have a lot of thoughts on travel insurance. The first thing that I recommend people is know what protections you already have. Many people don't realize how much they are already covered without having to spend a single dime. When you purchase a ticket from an airline, they already make certain guarantees that, and they will give you forms of compensation if they break those guarantees. So if there's, you book a flight and there's a huge delay or a cancellation that's not like weather related, that's a mechanical issue or something, or their computer system went down, you can ask for compensation. They'll typically give it to you as a result. If they lose your bags or damage your bags or they're delayed, you can ask for compensation. They'll typically give it to you. So not only do you have certain protections already from the airline, you also have certain protections through your credit card that you book with. Now, these are going to vary credit card to credit card, but in general, many of them will give you similar protections as well, where if there's a big delay or cancellation on your flight, you can get money for that. If your bags get messed up, if there are other sorts of issues, even if you need things like a medical evacuation or stuff like that, some credit cards will cover that. And so knowing what you're already protected for so that you're not buying something that's superfluous, I think is really, really important. But then it's also, if you're really kind of gung-ho on buying insurance, making sure you're really clear on what it is that you're purchasing. Many people kind of will just click yes on the travel insurance page when you're booking their flight because they're thinking about it almost philosophically. They're thinking about it in moral terms, like, oh, I want to be protected. I want to watch my downside. I want to make sure that I don't lose everything. So I'm going to click yes, not realizing that this doesn't make them eligible to just cancel their flight and get a refund.
You can't claim anything.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like so much of the fine print is there to deny giving you claims. And the time that most people realize this is when they're trying to collect on a claim, not when they're making the purchase. And obviously by that time, it's too late. And, a lot of people learned this really, unfortunately, firsthand when the pandemic first hit before the airlines loosened up their refund policies. And they realized that the insurance that they had bought did not let them just cancel their tickets or change the dates and get compensation for that. They would have had to buy a much more expensive form of insurance called cancel for any reason insurance. And so, I hate saying like, oh, just read the fine print because look, I almost never read the fine print. I'm a normal person that way.
Yeah.
But with something like travel insurance, if all you're trying to do is kind of assuage your guilt or feel better about it, understand what that is, then you're just paying 20, 30 bucks to just kind of feel better. But if you really want to make sure that you would be protected and insured, it really does make sense to read the fine print and contrast that with the protections you already have from the airline and the credit card you used.
I think it's also important to mention too, Scott, that you can buy travel insurance from websites that aren't the airline website, right? You can go out there on the open market and shop travel insurance. You can often get a better deal. You can get better coverage for a lower price, all that kind of stuff. So you're not subject to just buying it on the checkout screen of American Airlines or wherever you're getting your airline ticket from.
Yes. And shopping around like that is almost certainly going to get you a better deal. I mean, if you think about it, if the default option when you buy a flight from American or Delta or wherever, the default option they show you is almost certainly not going to be as good or as valuable as if you shopped around for it. So that's a really good point.
Nice. So Scott, let's ask maybe an obvious question. You know, let's kind of zoom out a little bit here. Like, do you feel comfortable at this point in time traveling? Right? Like, do you feel comfortable getting on a plane and going somewhere if it wasn't necessary?
I personally would feel comfortable getting on an airplane right now. And the reason why is that airplanes are not as dangerous as we might think they are, that they don't tend to be vectors of disease. They don't tend to be hotspots of transmission. They don't tend to be kind of super spreading events. And that's not me talking, that's epidemiologist Dr. Joseph Allen from Harvard, Harvard-trained professor who really studies kind of air quality in airplanes, talking about this in the Washington Post and elsewhere, that, look, millions and millions of people have flown on airplanes since February, since March when the pandemic began. If airplanes were super spreading events, if there were, you know, tons and tons of people getting sick on them in these big clusters, we would know about it by now. The fact that is that there's only been one instance that we've identified where multiple people on an airplane came down with coronavirus. Now you might be asking, well, why is that? You know, it seems so like such an obvious place for disease transmission. You've got a lot of people in a kind of confined space. It's not outdoors. The reason why, and this is why I would personally be comfortable on a plane, is that contra the sort of idea that, oh, it's all recycled air on board, it's all recirculated, there is a lot of fresh air when you're up at 30,000 feet. It kind of boggles the mind, and this is something that we didn't really need to think about before all of a sudden the air quality on planes became paramount. But it's true that the airplanes are sucking up fresh air from the outside through the like a complex series of vents and hoses, where essentially they're continuously throughout the flight bringing fresh air, fresh oxygen in from the outside. Obviously, we need fresh air, fresh oxygen to breathe, so that obviously
that helps,
kind of makes a lot of sense. But it's not just too that the air that's on board is the exact same air that was there at takeoff. There are these really kind of powerful hospital grade air filters on board called HEPA filters that are continuously cycling the air to clear out, I think it's since like 99.97% of particles on board. I say all this not to be like Pollyannish, oh, you know, nobody could ever get sick on an airplane. Like, yes, if somebody is sitting next to you and has coronavirus and they sneeze, like, I would not want to be in that situation. A HEPA-grade air filter and fresh air from the outside is probably not going to protect you in that situation. But
yeah,
if somebody sneezes, you know, 20 rows back, I'm not sitting there worried like, oh, the entire plane is going to get sick because of all these sorts of protections that are on board. Add on that the fact that, you know, everybody is wearing masks now, or should be. Most people are wearing masks, which is really helpful. They think it might cut down on transmission as much as 10x. All of those factors are reasons why planes haven't been the super spreading events that we might have anticipated, given that it's indoors, given it's a lot of people in confined spaces, and that you can't really have social distancing per se. I think it's important to know the science here if helpful and comforting, but at the end of the day, vacation should be fun. Like, it should be like something enjoyable, not something that's stressful. And so if you're going to be, if you know, like, oh, I'm just going to be really worried, I'm going to be stressed out, I'm going to be not enjoying myself, that doesn't sound like a very fun vacation to me. Like, I don't think that's something that you should feel like you have to do. I think you should do it when you feel comfortable and able to do so without feeling like you're putting your life at risk to get on that plane.
All right. Well, that answer makes me feel less bad about the last question I want to ask you. So let's say hypothetical here. Somebody had a 10-year anniversary coming up in October.
Okay.
And right. And they
hypothetical congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much to the hypothetical person. So like where have you been seeing great deals recently? And yeah, is there any place that you would be like, man, in October, you should totally go there?
That is an excellent, excellent question. Now, presumably, this person may be flying out of somewhere like Atlanta.
Yeah, should there's a good likelihood.
Should be a major airport there, probably.
All right. So I'll tell you one place where we have been seeing some really surprisingly great deals lately, and that has been Japan. Japan, ooh, typically one of the most expensive places to fly to in the US because it's so popular. Like, it's an amazing, I mean, for good reason. It's one of my favorite countries in the world to visit alongside Mexico. And normally flights, especially from Atlanta to Japan, can be $1,200, $1,300, $1,400. We found it last week for $545 round trip, including in October.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, over to Tokyo. So that's one of the places that definitely kind of springs to mind. If you're looking to stay somewhere maybe a little bit closer to home, I'll be honest, some of the best deals that have been popping up lately have been domestic deals because that's where there's been the most capacity. That's where there've been the most planes flying. So a few recent deals that we found on full service airlines, including in sort of the fall, Atlanta nonstop to Philadelphia or Chicago for $51 round trip. Again, this is not on Spirit. This is not on Frontier. This is on full service airlines, or even to somewhere like LA for $99 nonstop round trip. So those are the places that, you know, look, if I was going to take my wife on a anniversary trip this October, first might be thinking Japan, but if we're looking to stay somewhere a little closer to home, Chicago or LA would be my choices.
Sweet, man. Well, those are good tips, so I might take those into consideration.
Well, Scott, like, where else can folks go to learn about some affordable flights?
Yeah, we are working out of scottscheapflights.com. There's no apostrophe, no dashes, no underscores, just scottscheapflights.com. Look, we're searching for cheap flights all day, every day, and when we find them, we don't want to keep it to ourselves. We want to be able to share it with folks and help them be able to travel for way less than they anticipated. And so, you know, if you're interested in getting cheap flights sent, emailed directly to you out of your home airport, we'd love for you to sign up. It'd be an honor to send you those deals.
Scott, thank you so much for all the information and for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, man, Joel. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thanks again, man. And Joel, man, how great is it to have Scott on again? You know, someone who's an expert within this industry, who knows airfare, who knows flights and what's going on day in and day out. So I'm glad that we're able to have Scott on to share some of his knowledge, some of his wisdom with our listeners.
Yeah, Scott is an airfare nerd, kind of like on the level that we're money nerds. So I appreciate his advice and his wisdom. And hopefully that helps our listeners who are thinking about future travel, who are thinking about travel that they currently have booked. Hopefully that was helpful in how you make decisions and in how you approach the airlines when you're looking for a refund. So Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. If anybody wants show notes for this episode, just go to our website at howtomoney.com.
And it's always helpful to the show if you were to leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts. So if you haven't done that already, we would appreciate a solid review. So Joel, that's going to be it, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.